Sushi in a Time of COVID. A Good Omens Podfic, written by Jupiter Ash and read by Job. This is part 15 of the Tales of Eden Cottage series. Summary. Lockdown meant that all non-essential services were to close, including restaurants, which left Hiroyuki in a bit of a situation.
Hi, it's me.
The voice on the phone paused for a moment, then said,
What would it take for a delivery to Sussex?
The announcement of a national lockdown had been far from unexpected. Now it was here, though, the most serious issue for Hiroyuki was what a lockdown would mean for him, for the family, and for the restaurant in general. The pandemic was already taking a toll, even before the announcement that everything was to shut. Takings had dropped alarmingly in the past week. More bookings had been cancelled than made. That, at the time, had been concerning, but was no longer an issue, as they were now going to be shut for several weeks at least. 3 weeks, the Prime Minister had said. The restrictions would be under constant review, and the government would look again in 3 weeks and relax them if the evidence showed they would be able to. In the meantime, all non-essential services were to shut, including restaurants, which obviously meant them. It wasn't all bad news. Along with announcing the lockdown, the government had also published their program of support for workers and businesses. Some sort of furlough scheme, it was called. He was looking through the details now, running the numbers. It would certainly help to cover most of the staff wages, but there was still a possibility he would have to lay off a staff member or two. Made worse by the fact most of them were family. With no customers, most of their most recent stock orders would go to waste. He would cancel their next order, but would still be charged something for it. Unfortunately, there was only so much fish they could store themselves, and they prided themselves on using the freshest of ingredients. Most of the vegetables would go to waste, even with batch cooking for their own use. The costliest of all, though, was the rent. Regardless of whether the restaurant was open or not, the rent would still need to be paid. And central London was hardly the cheapest of places, even if it was only Soho. Yes, that would be their biggest hit. No income, but rent still going out. The phone was ringing again now. It was the restaurant phone rather than the back phone, so whoever it was had either not got the message they were closed, or it was a wrong number. It stopped ringing. There had to be a way of coming through all of this virtually intact, Hiroyuki thought, his attention back on the figures in front of him. The Prime Minister might have said 3 weeks, but Hiroyuki was no fool. With the way things were, 3 months would be more likely. It takes time for outbreaks like this to die back down, considerably more time than it took to get to this point in the first place. The phone started ringing again. So he had to plan for the longer term. Restaurants would be one of the last things to reopen anyway, being both a non-necessity and a place where people would mix, increasing the risk of passing something on. Then there was the reluctance some customers would have to coming back and putting themselves at risk. The last week was proof of that. Given a choice, many people had opted to stay away. No, whatever plans he put in place, they would have to be able to set out the next 3 to 6 months at the least, with the possibility of things not fully settling down again for a year at least. A year's worth of rent on a limited income, even with no other overheads. That was going to be tough. And poor Suki had been counting on the tips to go towards paying for university. Her school was, of course, shut too, and there had been no word yet about exams. The phone started ringing again. It stopped. It sounded as if someone had finally picked it up. Probably Suki. She was a good kid. 3 to 6 months, though. Uncle, I am very sorry to interrupt you. He looked up at Suki's voice. She had the restaurant phone pressed against her chest. Hiroyuki waved for her to continue. Uncle, she said, there is a gentleman on the phone talking about takeaway. Hiroyuki frowned. Takeaway? They didn't do takeaway, and Suki knew that. Inform the gentleman, we do not do takeaway, he said. That was part of his problem. Previously, they had not done takeaway because they were a proper, authentic, sit-in Japanese restaurant. They served freshly cooked, high-quality food with an experience. Offering food to be eaten away from the premises would only cheapen that experience. Unfortunately, it was also likely to be their downfall. Sit-in restaurants all had to close, but takeaway, at least by delivery, was able to continue. The question was, would it be worth their while to try and set up a delivery service? It would involve time, of course, but that they had. It would also cost money. They had less of that. Would it be ethical to spend money they had now in the hope it would bring in money in the future? They might be able to see out 6 months as they currently were, but setting up a proper website with ordering facilities, a simplified menu which was conducive to being transported, and ensuring they could provide an adequate delivery service would all take time, effort, and most of all, money. Then there was the fact they would be starting from near nothing, as their regulars would not be expecting them to offer such a service, so some advertisement would also be needed. There was also the option of those delivery companies as well, but did they want to be associated with the likes of Just Eat and Deliveroo? Uncle, I have already informed the gentleman that we do not do takeaway, Suki said patiently. He insists that we do, that he has had it before, and he refuses to listen. Ah, Hiroyuki thought, a madman. In over 20 years, they had never offered takeaway, so the gentleman was either mad or mistaken. Tell the gentleman he must be confusing us with another restaurant. Switching to English, Suki did so, but it seemed the man on the phone did not understand, or else did not want to. Uncle, she said, coming back to him. The gentleman insists he is not mistaken. He called you by name and wants to speak to you personally. Says you will take the call. In over 20 years of running a restaurant in central London, Hiroyuki had seen all types of customers. That did not mean he wished to speak to all of them, regardless of how demanding they were, or the fact they appeared to know his name. Uncle, the gentleman also says to tell you his name is Crowley. Crowley. Hiroyuki took the phone. Aziraphale Sun had been one of their earliest customers, a polite and usual jovial English gentleman of middling years he came regularly, tipped generously, and gladly listened to suggestions of what he might like from the menu. Respectful, knowledgeable, and effusive with his praise, he quickly became one of their most beloved patrons. Aziraphale's son even surprised them by speaking some Japanese before it was even fashionable to do so. It was a little archaic at times, but nonetheless correct with the right level of politeness. He always came alone, though. It had not taken Hiroyuki long to hypothesize why. Aziraphale's son was the type of Englishman that Hiroyuki had met before, first while he was studying at university, then later when he learned more about the area he had set up his restaurant in. Kind, caring, a little bit soft, Aziraphale's son was, in short, not the type of man to have a wife and family. Reserved and reticent, he was also not the sort to be seen out in public with a gentleman friend for fear for some sort of discovery. The way Hiroyuki saw it, it was none of his business, but it was somewhat sad for such a lovely man to always dine alone. Perhaps that was why, on quieter days when Aziraphale's son was with them, Hiroyuki would take the opportunity to speak to him, to ask how his order had been, to offer suggestions as to what else he might like from the menu for a different day. Delightfully, Aziraphale's son had always seemed to welcome these conversations, and it did not take long before Aziraphale's son started to regale him with tales from his own time in Japan, which accounted for his knowledge of Japanese language. The stories did not always make sense. There had been mentions of samurai at some point, and reference to Kyoto being the capital, but the capital had been moved to Tokyo in 1869, and the samurai had been abolished around the same time. It was while Aziraphale's son had been telling him about having tea in the Nishinomaru Gardens that he first mentioned the name, Crowley. There was no honorific to the name, no san or sama or even dono, even though Aziraphale's son had clearly demonstrated his knowledge and use of honorifics. This meant he was leaving it off on purpose, which at least suggested a particularly close relationship. But equally, there was no use of kare or no kimi, which would have confirmed a romantic relationship. No other name was ever mentioned either. So even now, nearly 20 years since he had first heard the name, Hiroyuki did not know whether it was a personal or a family name. It was always just Crowley. 20 years passed, and still the only name that Aziraphale's son mentioned was this Crowley. When they had in a special order of kusu, it was Crowley that Aziraphale's son said would have loved it. When they offered a new dish, Aziraphale's son lamented that Crowley should be here to try it with them. When Aziraphale's son disappeared for a few months, his only words of explanation on his return was Crowley. Of the mysterious Crowley, however, they never saw. Not in person, not in pictures. It was just a name, just Crowley. Then, for a few years, Aziraphale's son became less frequent. His bookshop closed for months at a time, and he himself was seen considerably less often in the area. One of the few times he came back to the restaurant, he mentioned having been tasked with watching over a young boy, that the fate of the world depended upon it. From anyone else, it would have, at best, sounded completely fanciful, but from Aziraphale's son, it was matter of fact. and Hiroyuki had no reason to disbelieve him. In fact, he had more reason to believe him than disbelieve him. Because Aziraphale's son did not lie. He spoke of events as if he had been there. He mentioned places that no longer existed. He spoke Japanese with a formal, older dialect. But more than that, in all the years he had been coming to the restaurant, he had not aged a day. Hiroyuki never asked. He heard the whispers about the Soho cryptid, of the shop that had been there for 200 years, handed down to father and son, but each of them looking exactly like the previous owner. Of the good fortune of those who followed this individual, provided you did not try to purchase any of his books. Hiroyuki listened, and he offered his best recommendations, and he poured his best sake, and he kept his lips firmly sealed. And throughout the time his restaurant grew and flourished. Then one day, not long after those strange few summer days that no one talked about anymore, Aziraphale's son returned. And he was not alone.
Hi, it's me.
The voice on the phone paused for a moment, then said,
What would it take for a delivery to Sussex?
Crowley-san, on the surface, was nothing like Hiroyuki had imagined. He had thought Crowley-san would be another being like Aziraphale-san, although he did not ponder on Aziraphale-san's true nature in case it inadvertently caused offense. Crowley-san featured in Aziraphale-san's stories enough that Hiroyuki determined him to be another cryptid, and it was clear from Aziraphale-san's tone that he was very fond of this Crowley. There was no description, though, except for the use of the phrase Wily Serpent. Then Crowley-san appeared. He was Aziraphale-san's opposite in every way. Sharp where Aziraphale-san was soft, dark where Aziraphale-san was light, decisive where Aziraphale-san was hesitant. In his actions, though, it was clear that Crowley-san was as fond, if not fonder, of Aziraphale-san as Aziraphale-san was of him. There was no deceit, no hiding. Whatever had kept them apart all this time had not been of their own choosing. They stayed into the night. Aziraphale-san started by ordering a few of his favorite dishes to share, excitedly telling Crowley-san about them as he did so. Crowley-san ordered alcohol. Aziraphale-san ate, although not before offering Crowley-san a taste of each of the dishes. Crowley-san poured their drinks. At times, Crowley-san would remark on a dish brought to another table, and Aziraphale-san would brighten and tell him about it. Naturally, that led to them ordering more food. Small dishes of tempura, of yakitori, of sashimi. But most of all, of sushi. It was the happiest Hiroyuki had ever seen Aziraphale-san. And even as the other diners left and they reached their usual closing time and beyond, Hiroyuki had not the heart to interrupt them. It would not be polite, after all. It was Crowley-san who finally noticed, who, having looked around, softly remarked, Angel, I believe they are waiting for us to go. Flush of cheek, Aziraphale-san looked round in some surprise. Then, with sincere apology when he realized the lights were down, the chairs were up, and there were only 4 of them left. The 3 of them and young Suki, who had refused to leave until they did, No matter how much Hiroyuki promised, she would still receive the full tab. There was also a considerable amount of food still on the table, for which Aziraphale-san was equally apologetic for. "It's fine," Crowley-san said. "We'll take it back to the bookshop. I'm sure Hiroyuki-san here would be happy to box it up." Hiroyuki assured them he was more than happy to box up the remains, and made no mention of Crowley-san's polite but equally archaic Japanese. Suki was tasked with fetching the boxes, while Hiroyuki finalized the rather extensive bill. "And a bottle of your best kuzu," Crowley-san said as he sauntered up to the bar. Hiroyuki nodded and wordlessly accepted the black card he was offered. That had been his first meeting with Crowley-san, but not the last. They returned every few weeks after that, sampling different parts of the menu and accepting suggestions of dishes not yet on the menu, but made a point of not staying as long as the first time. Each time they took home what remained, to the point where they started ordering additional dishes directly to go. Then came the news they were moving to Sussex. Hiroyuki did not expect to see them again. Whatever had kept Aziraphale-san in the same place for 2 centuries had either come to a head or resolved itself, as had whatever it was that had kept him and Crowley-san apart for so long. Hiroyuki suspected they were one and the same thing, or at the very least, linked. It also had something to do with the boy Aziraphale-san had previously spoken about. It was with sadness that he bade them both farewell, thanking Aziraphale-san in particular for his patronage all this time.
"Oh, I'm sure we'll be back," Aziraphale-san had said in that jovial manner of his.
Hiroyuki took him at his word, but also kept in mind that to a being such as him, time may not be quite the same as it was to a mortal human. In their 20 years of acquaintance, he himself had gotten older, grey hair at his temple, his eyesight weaker, his movements not as fluid as they had been. Aziraphale-san was, in contrast, exactly the same. So it was with some surprise that a few months after the big move, they reappeared together.
"Have to meet a delivery at the shop," Aziraphale-san explained, his eyes bright. "A rather lovely book collection from Buckinghamshire. Only managed a cursory examination while at the house, but it looks very promising. May even find a few first editions in there. Being delivered tomorrow. It's all very exciting."
Their favorite table just so happened to be free, a fortuitous late cancellation that Hiroyuki thought might not be as fortuitous as it appeared. As had become the habit, Aziraphale-san ordered his favorites, while Crowley-san picked from the wine list. Then, as they were winding down, Crowley-san sauntered over, principally to pay, but also to put in another order of some of Aziraphale-san's favorites before the kitchen closed. "To go," Crowley said simply. "For later, when he gets peckish, sorting out all those books." Once again, Hiroyuki did not question it. If Crowley-san wanted to keep Aziraphale-san fed in sushi, Hiroyuki would see it done. The phone call a few weeks before Christmas came as a surprise, though. They did not, by tradition, open on Christmas Day, but that was more due to a lack of demand and the opportunity to have a full day off than to celebrate the festival itself.
What would it take for you to agree to some private catering?
Crowley's son had asked. Considering who or what he was dealing with, he would have agreed a bare minimum price since Crowley's son had confirmed he would pick it up himself Christmas morning, and it always bode well to keep beings as themselves on your side. But the price Crowley's son quoted without being asked made the entire venture more than worthwhile. The staff received a surprise bonus that Christmas. It was not takeaway, though, Hiroyuki later concluded. It was a Zerafield-san. Many things were not the same when it was a Zerafield-san.
Hi, it's me.
The voice on the phone paused for a moment, then said,
What would it take for a delivery to Sussex?
It was, in essence, a takeaway with delivery. Sussex wasn't exactly local, but Hiroyuki was sure Crowley's son would pay whatever he quoted without question. The old stories, however, always said to be careful of supernatural entities. They were not to be cheated, abused, or taken advantage of. Be careful also of making a deal with them, for you may end up losing far more than you bargain for. That said, taking a deep breath, he laid out the issues as he saw them. There was a long pause at the other end, then a sigh.
Well,
Crowley's son finally said,
Angel would be rather disappointed if his favorite sushi place was no longer there when all this is over, and I could do with a new project. Leave it with me.
43 minutes later, a confused gentleman called, saying he was a website developer, and what exactly did they need doing? When Hiroyuki asked, the gentleman confirmed the payment had already been taken care of. No, Crowley did not personally know a website developer, but he did know some important people in the city who were in his debt, having been helped on their way to riches and glory by a deal with a demon. Phoning one up and saying,
It's Crowley, I need a favor.
Was generally enough for them to fall over themselves to help him quickly, without question, and at no charge. Finding and paying for a freelance website developer was the least they could do. 20 minutes after that, Hiroyuki had an alert by his bank, confirming a new deposit of enough money to see them through the next 3 months at least. Again, not Crowley's money, but gratefully donated along with the expertise of the website developer. 10 minutes after that, Crowley's son himself phoned back.
Now,
Crowley's son said,
What about that delivery to Sussex?
A few weeks later. Quarantine. Crowley said as the ambulance carrying Dave pulled away. Oh, said Aziraphale, who until then had been preoccupied with other matters. Blast! There was a long pause as that sank in. I suppose I won't be able to share my baking for a while then, Aziraphale said after a moment. Nope. No more daily walks. Nope. No more feeding the dogs. Nope. I suppose Joshua won't be allowed to come over to see Oscar and Benny. I suppose not. There was another pause. Well, Zerafield said after a moment, at least we can still have sushi. Anthony Crowley, Little Avon Community Group page. Ordering sushi. Anyone want in? The end.